Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 580. It's the 8th of September, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Jay Cheatham, CEO of Pantheon Resources. That's P-A-N-R ticker. Discusses their recent news regarding their projects in Tyler and Polk counties onshore in East Texas. Also on the podcast, I have the Mad Stork private investor talking about the following companies: Management Resources, ticker MRS, Ariana Resources, AAU, plus Chris Bailey, founder of Financial Orbit, covers Ashtead Group and Thomas Cook Group. I also have the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. Worth keeping an eye on companies that regularly appear in this list, because it's a measure of sentiment, a flow of people following the stocks. Also, I have the most liked and disliked RNSs over the last 24 hours, plus today's one for your watch list, suggested by Oil Player 2009, is Goldstone Resources, ticker GRL. I'll read out the reasons why Oil Player has gone for this in a bit.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jay Cheatham, CEO of Pantheon Resources, ticker code P-A-N-R. Thank you for joining me, Jay.
It's good to be with you, Justin, and to talk about my favorite subject, Pantheon.
Yeah, stocks and shares are also my favorite subjects. There we are. And it's nice to have you on, because I know you're a very popular stock and you've done very well. And I've had some news out. We'll go through some questions in a bit. But for people not aware of Pantheon, Jay, can you give a summary as to what you're all about, please?
Yeah, Pantheon is listed on the AIM market there in London. Our investments are onshore U.S. in East Texas through our various subsidiaries. We're an exploration and production company focused there in East Texas onshore.
Okay, all right. So let's go through some news here. And firstly, let's talk about the results at the VOBM2 at Polk County. The first attempt to drill horizontally in that formation. Now, you suspended the well in favor of coming back and re-entering it sort of vertically. Can you run us through, you know, some of the difficulties you experienced there, and what did you learn from that, Jay?
Yeah, well, Justin, what the main thing we learned is that the Eagle Ford sandstone is not suitable for horizontal drilling. The rock proved to be abrasive and hard. We were basically chewing up diamond PDC bits. What that caused to happen is the drill bit wanted to deviate from the path. We were trying to drill, at an 89 degree angle, which is almost perfectly horizontally, and the drill bit wants to go to that path of least resistance. It wanted to dive down and go out of the zone we wanted to stay in, and we had a lot of difficulty keeping the bit on course. In the later stages of the well, our rate of penetration had slowed to 1.5 feet per hour, and it was just strictly a cost-benefit analysis that led us to suspend the well. We were behind schedule. There were a lot of small issues that were occurring during the horizontal drilling of this section. We had MWD and mud motor failures. We were continually trying different configuration of mud motors and drill bits to increase our rate of penetration. Every time you had to make a trip to change out a drill bit, we were wasting about a day to make that trip because it's a very deep, and it continually disrupted our progress. We believed that once we had these these issues ironed out, we could increase and make good rate of penetration. And we did at times. But it wasn't until we had our final contractor on site, had everything working right, the mud motors, the bits, the MWD tools, and we drilled with them for a number of days, and we concluded that our rate of penetration was just too slow. That we would be better off from a cost-benefit analysis to suspend and come back later and complete it as a vertical well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, and what was the cost of that, do you think, Jay?
The cost will be our share of $5.5 to $6 million, but we will be able to use a large portion of that well again. We'll come back up the hole, plug off, and go in vertically. We still would have the opportunity to complete the horizontal section if we choose to, and we will make that final determination after we drill the VOBM number 3 well, where we're moving the rig over right now. But it is most likely we will come back and complete it vertically. On the plus side in all of this, we encountered significant hydrocarbons.
Yeah, and I think that's worth pointing out. I mean, you know, because it's a suspension here. So tell me more about those hydrocarbons in the well, and why didn't you flow test them?
Okay. Well, we were flaring a 25-foot flare. That's significant. You know, I can't tell you how much it is, but 25 feet is better than 10, and it's also better, you know, better than 15. So it's a fairly sizable flare. We didn't flow test it. And flow testing would have been hugely expensive. I mean, first of all, we're dealing with very, very high pressures. You know, we're talking about 11,000 to 12,000 pounds per square inch at the reservoir. We would have had to set a complete production liner all the way back to the surface. So we're talking about putting, you know, more than 16,000 feet of casing in the hole. Then we would have to cement that in, perforate, put a packer in, tubing, to truly test it properly. And then, if we wanted to go in and complete as a vertical, we would be even further compromised because we would have to use smaller tools because of the interior inside diameter of that production liner were set. So it just was not at all economic to do that. The picture of the flare is on our image gallery on our website. So if people are interested, you can go on our website and see the flare. So we know there are hydrocarbons there. Mm. And it does de-risk and demonstrate that there are hydrocarbons. We hit the zones where we thought we would from our seismic interpretation. The bottom line is we learned a lot. And the objective of our business is to find the most a cost-efficient way to extract oil and gas from a reservoir, and we think we learned a lot from that. Mm-hmm. The prospectivity and the potential of our Polk County play is undiminished. You know, nothing that we did in the VOBM number 2 well, or what we learned has diminished our view of the play. It's unchanged.
Yeah, well, that's very important. So let's move on to Tyler County and the frack at VS1 well. What do those results mean there?
Well, firstly, it's not, quote, a bad result. We only fracked the top 10%, about 25 feet of the Eagle Ford sandstone, and we also fracked 20 feet in the Austin Chalk. And we have a 270-foot section there, and with 107 feet of perforations. So we fracked that top zone. We believe that, you know, almost all of the flow test contribution is from that top zone. We don't anticipate that the Austin Chalk is going to contribute anything until we get a bit of a pressure drop, because there is a pressure differential between those two zones. And we believe the liquids are likely to increase over time as the pressure drops, and that's what happened in similar wells over in the AA wells field. So we're disappointed that we didn't get the headline 2 to 3 times uplift that we had hoped. We got a modest increase in our flow rates, but it's not a bad result. What we do know is that the frack was successful because both our flowing tubing pressure and our shut-in tubing pressures have had significant improvement post-frac versus pre-frac. And also we saw a very pleasing flowing tubing pressure response to changes in the choke size. So when you go from a larger choke to a smaller choke, we saw, you know, significant pressure deltas, which are very pleasing. Overall, the Smith well flowed 920 barrels of oil equivalent per day, 5,500 MCF plus condensate on a 1464 choke. Now, I have pretty small fingers, and if I put my little finger out, a 1464 choke is smaller than the size of my little finger, so it's a very small aperture.
Okay, and when will this well be commercial?
Well, Justin, this well is commercial. Everyone can do the math. If we assume that the well were to flow at a sustained rate equal to its tested rate, and I reemphasize it'll take about 6 months production to make an accurate assessment. For illustrative purposes only, at that tested rate, at today's gas price of over 270 per MCF, it would generate over $450,000 gross revenue per month on a 100% basis. Now, that's before royalty and taxes. But to put this into context, the estimate for drilling the next vertical well in Polk County is only $3.75 million. And analog wells in the AA wells field have produced for a very long period of time.
Okay. All right. So does the VOS-1 result have any implications now for the broader Sotala County prospect?
No. Nothing that we have learned from this well diminishes our assessment of the potential in Tyler County. We knew VOS was compromised with potential skin damage, and it had definitely has permeability variability, as do many of our lookalikes that we always talk about in the AA wells field. And importantly, in the Eagle Ford sandstone woodbine trend, initial flow rates are not necessarily a strong indicator of ultimate recovery. Many wells in this trend, especially lower permeability wells, have flowed without meaningful decline for up to 10 years. And if this well performs similarly, as we hope it would, then it has the potential to be really a great well. And it has the possibility to exceed our pre-drill estimates. However, let me caveat that. We will need to have a sustained period of production to make an accurate assessment. And we would give that caveat, whatever the flow test was, whether it was a great flow test or the one where we got a modest increase, we'd still need a sustained period of production to make, you know, an accurate assessment. But the most important determinator for Tyler County is going to be our next well. And that well will be a center basin test that'll be an additional 4.5 to 5 mile step out from the VOS number one well. And that well also will be approximately 10 miles from the LP2 well, which is a well that our partner drilled in this basin some time ago, prior to us entering the venture. So it's pretty easy to do the math. From the LP2 well to our VOS well is about 4.5 to 5 miles. And from the VOS well to our next well, center basin test, is another 5 miles. So from the LP2 to the center basin test is 10 miles. Mm-hmm. So from the first well to the third well, which will be halfway through this basin, it'll be 10 miles. We're talking about a potential reservoir size that is enormous. And a positive result will have extremely important and positive ramifications for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what now, and you know, what are the operational plans from here?
Okay, Justin, we're currently moving the rig from VOBM number 2 over to the VOBM number 3. Where the pad is ready, and we hope that we'll be spudding that well next week. After we drill VOBM number 3, which is will be a vertical well now. We'll move the rig over to Tyler County and spud the center basin test. And while we're drilling the Tyler County, we'll order and arrange for our gas processing facilities to be ordered and installed on the VOBM number 3 pad. We built that pad larger than necessary to accommodate our gas processing. And then we'll hook up the Polk County wells, and number 1 and number 3, and then number 2 would be hooked up after it's completed. If the center basin test is successful, then that will allow us to identify the most efficient location for our processing facilities in Tyler County, and we would then endeavor to order those and put them in location and hook up the two wells that we have in Tyler County.
Okay.
And Justin, the great thing about operating in Tyler and Polk counties in East Texas is the massive amount of infrastructure nearby. It means that it can take as little as 30 days from hooking up a well to production, which is a really attractive quality for oil and gas wells, and part of the reason that our operating costs are estimated to be so low.
Okay, so given the delays, what does this mean for your timetable, and is there merit for a multi-rig program there?
Well, the delay is going to be basically the time we chewed up on the VOBM number 2 a couple of months, that's what it means, a several month delay. But we think that's been compensated a little bit by the fact that the natural gas price has increased by almost a dollar per MCF over the time period that we've waited. A multi-well program, yes, in time. But however, if we had had two rigs running drilling VOBM number 2 and VOBM number 3 at this time, we would have made a serious error in drilling two horizontal wells together. So we will, once we have some cash flow, put a second rig on out there drilling, but we want to learn first and make sure we do it properly.
Okay, and talking about cash flow and cash, what is your cash position at the moment?
Well, fortunately, we're very well funded. We raised $30 million in March. We spent $6.5 million on an extra 8% working interest in our Polk County acreage. The well cost of VOBM, our share of $5.5 to $6 million, and the frac cost, you can take some of that out. We have plenty of money. Future vertical wells are going to cost less than $4 million on a 100% basis. So in Polk County, our 58% interest is well below $2.5 million. So we have plenty of money to fund this drilling program.
Okay. And I've got no more questions, Jay, but any final thoughts we sort of haven't covered here?
Okay, well, Polk County's unchanged. We lost our share of the extra drilling costs. It's plus or minus $3 million. We found hydrocarbons. It gives us confidence that we're targeting the right areas in good locations. We tried horizontal. It didn't work. Hey, we'll lick our wounds and go back to vertical. Mm-hmm. In Tyler, the frac, we didn't get it 2 to 3 times, but we did get modest increase. Could still be a great well. It's entirely possible. There are no guarantees. We're very pleased with the flowing tubing pressure and shut-in tubing pressure changes and increases. It indicates the frac had was effective. And has the possibility to have a long life, very flat production with very modest decline. But again, we caveat that. We need to observe that with some production history. But okay. Overall, it's our view of the play is unchanged.
Okay. All right. So right here on Vox Markets, Jay, we have what's called a most followed list. And companies get in the top 5. Almost we see a sprint in the share price. So what I want to do here is get, if you can, there's a lot of information that I know. So if you can sort of round up, some of the best points, the best top 3 points in summary, what would they be, Jay?
Okay, it's an exceptionally high potential play backed by an extensive amount of science and it's onshore in the U.S. We have extremely low CapEx and OpEx, which could be combined less than $5 a barrel of oil equivalent. We're close to infrastructure, and we've hit 3 out of 3 wells have proven hydrocarbons, and we have much to play for.
Excellent stuff. So if you like that, hit the follow button on PANR, and you'll get RNSs sent straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever Pantheon Resources release them. Jay, thank you very much for coming on. Speak soon.
Thank you very much, Justin. It was a pleasure.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is private investor, the Mad Stork. You're right, fella.
Morning, Justin. Yeah, pretty good.
Cool. Now, what do you feel like the markets have been like the last few weeks? It's been quite good, I suspect, on the smaller end anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were talking before about, you know, obviously Brexit and the anticipated sort of uncertainty around that hasn't really had much impact on the markets. I think we're seeing that sort of borne out. Yeah. I mean, certainly the lower end of AIM has seen some crazy rises, and there does seem to be a lot of money sloshing around at the moment. So I suspect most of the people listening to this have done pretty well in the last month or so.
Yeah, if it's certainly a small cap investor. I've got to thank you for Canadian Overseas Petroleum there, because I bagged on that, and I'd say four bagged stocks in the last couple of months. And does it worry you sometimes when that happens, though, when there's a lot of liquidity and smaller caps seem to be doing so well? Do you feel like we're heading towards a sell-off or not?
Well, it goes in, you know, it goes in cycles. So, you know, and certain, you know, don't need to tell you, sentiment is everything on AIM in the small cap space anyway, because it's always retail investors with the money. And so, you know, if something happens to turn sentiment around, it can change within a day, within a couple of days. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously at the moment it's all going pretty well, and people are making a lot of money. You know, all I'd say is it goes in cycles, and nothing lasts forever. And, you know, could be in a week's time, everyone's sort of kicking themselves and wailing and gnashing their teeth. You've got to take some profit.
Yeah, but how do you? I mean, what do you use? You know, a strategy you've built up, or is it just a gut feeling on certain stocks, or do you wait for percentage gain? When do you know when to take profit?
Well, usually, what I do in specific stocks is I'll have a sort of area in mind, and that might either be a specific price, in which case, what I'll do is I'll set a limit order on the stock, so when it hits that price, you know, the computer will sell it for me. This is just a quick trade that I did yesterday and today. Futura Medical, FUM, did a big rise, and he's still going yesterday on a very good RNS announcement, and I thought as long as it's strong into the close, which it was, it'll keep going today. And I just thought, okay, I'll be happy with, because I bought at 50p, and so I'll be happy with 80p.
Yeah.
So I set a limit order at 80p today, and it triggered. And obviously it's still going. But the thing is, if I hadn't set that limit order and hadn't done it automatically, what I'd probably be doing is I'd just be constantly looking at it, and because I'd done no research in the stock, and I wasn't like fundamentally confident about it, I'd probably end up either panicking or getting too greedy.
Yeah.
So the point is that, you know, you if you set limit orders and the computer does it for you, it takes the emotions out of it.
Yeah, that's the trouble.
So it's easier to take profit in that case.
Yeah, do you know what? So many times I've put a limit order to buy or something at a level I've looked at several times. I thought if it comes back that, it should come back that, right about support level. And sometimes I've seen a stock just dip, fill the order, and jump back up. And other times when I've got meddled with it and lifted my, because I think it's not coming down to that.
So tempting.
And it'll fill the order, then it'll go below to the original place you thought it would have gone to. And so, yeah, emotion does get in the way. But what I quite like there is that you say you bought, and I've seen this mentioned on Twitter a little bit, FUM, just looking at the share price last few days, ridiculous, isn't it? It's like 30 pence two trading days ago, and now it's up 91 pence. What I like there, though, is that you said you did no research on that. Now, some people were thinking, what? Listen to the podcast. You did no research and bought a stock. So why did you decide to make the investment? Some will say doing no research is a gamble. So why did you decide to go into it?
I didn't just buy it completely blind. I read the RNS.
Yeah.
And, having a little bit of experience in the market of what moves the market in a significant way, and what doesn't, a biotech firm reporting unexpectedly good results on their sort of flagship project, especially if there's been no movement beforehand, which there hadn't really with FUM, I thought, this is going to keep going. Yeah. It's not going to be a sort of spike and drop back RNS. I'd never looked at the company before. I'd just seen the RNS yesterday morning. So that's what I mean by doing no research. Obviously, I hadn't bought it blindly because everyone was tweeting about it.
Yeah.
But I hadn't done what I usually do, which is look in detail at the company and look for catalysts and finances and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say the company's it's got gel for a treatment of erectile dysfunction. And if you look at the candlesticks on the chart there, that's it's obviously working.
Okay. It's like the joke just right themselves, isn't
it? Yeah. So what are the stocks doing at the moment? What are you liking at the moment?
Took the Management Resource Solutions placing the other week. I'm very, very bullish on that.
Do you know what? Smudge Down was on a while back, and he mentioned those. And even though the ticker, which is quite good, is Mrs., isn't it? Mrs. And it sticks in your mind. I never really looked into it. Then he sent me a note the other day. He said, have a look at this, and because they're doing acquisitions, aren't they? And their revenue seems to be going up as a result, accreted there. And I was literally, a day later, they dropped back a little bit. I thought, I'm going to buy some of these. And noise, essentially. Someone else said something negative about them. And I didn't buy. And the last 2 days now, they've been up. And I thought, oh, do you know what? That's a lesson there, isn't it? Just ignore the noise. If you've done a little bit of research there and you feel at a gut level it's quite a good buy, you've got to block out the noise, haven't you?
You've got to be confident in your own judgment. If you trade entirely based on what other people are saying, you're never going to have the sort of big consistent winners, because you're trading on someone else's coattails, whether it be not buying or buying. You've got to have confidence in your own ability to do research.
Do the figure stuck in my head is that and this is it. I mean, looking at on, I'm really rounding up and being general and generalizing about this stock now. But essentially, with these businesses now acquired, looking to do around about, correct me if I'm wrong, looking to do revenue of about 100 million Oz dollars, even if you've got 10%, even a 5%, margin on that, is equal to around about their market cap, it was, and I thought, that, is worth a look. And they've raised money, haven't they, recently? Was it 10.5, I think, something like that? 10 pence?
10.5.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought, there we are. You've got the money coming in a little bit there at 10.5. So, I mean, that's a nice support level. So even if I was going to buy there, I think it was about 11.5 they were. So I always buy and I try to buy, expect to buy in three tranches, So the first buy is there, but I'm always prepared to buy at two bits lower as well on certain fall downs. And I didn't go with it. And it's looking like it's a bit strong. It's probably not too late, but I was annoyed now that it didn't get that earlier, lower price, which is quite annoying.
Yeah, no, once you're experienced on AIM, you really, or at least for me, it is really difficult because you know how what can happen in these stocks. You for me, I find it psychologically very difficult to buy when the price has already moved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that I've nailed into me is, listen, people often, we see debates on Twitter about good companies, bad companies and all this, but that's not, I mean, I'm not saying this is the same with management resources, but I see a lot of people now jumping into certain companies that fundamentally, to me, don't look a good long-term play, you know? But that's, regardless, you can still make money on those, you know? Like I said, if you buy at the right price, you can make, I mean, the ultimate combination for me is buying a good company at a good price. Now, you can buy a rubbish company at a good price and make money, you know? So those can be, you know.
It's all about timing. You know, my strategy has always been to look for as long as it doesn't matter how rubbish the company is, as long as it's got a catalyst there that will get people interested in the stock. It doesn't matter if it's not, if you know, in 10 years' time it's going to be bust or whatever, because it probably will, or diluted to hell, because it probably will, because that's the reality. I'm not saying this is going to happen for MRS, by the way, because I think that's it's an actual proper company with proper revenue. But you're talking about these crappy little pre-revenue, a couple of million pounds, shells or resource companies or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, those companies, long term, 95% of them are either going to be bust, change business, diluted. You're going to lose all your money. But if you look and it's trading at a stable sort of low point, and you can see a catalyst on the horizon that's going to shift the price, then that's the best time to buy.
Yeah.
As long as you recognise that it's not, as long as you don't get married to it. And you recognise that it is essentially a long, sort of medium-term trade, then, it's possible to make a lot of money.
Yeah. So, definitely it's one to look into, I think. That company, like you said, it's decent revenues there, and, it should progress. Any other companies are you looking at?
Apart from the ones that I mentioned before, Coppel, Prospects,
mm-hmm.
The ones that I'm still holding, still confident about. One that I don't think I mentioned, or I may have mentioned it a while back, is Ariana Resources, AAU.
Yeah.
Which is a gold play, and they're building their mine. I mean, if you look on Twitter, they regularly post pictures of their mine being built.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be online, will be first gold pour, first production Q4 this year. So, October to December. And they've also got exploration drilling results coming up this month. Mm-hmm. And then they'll continue throughout the rest of the year as well. And that will expand the resource at Kizil Tepe is the mine.
Yeah.
And they're moving from exploration to production at a time when the gold price is doing really well, and there's been a bit of a knock to sentiment because they're in Turkey. We had a bit of a knock to sentiment with the Turkish political situation, but that seems to be all under control. They did a placing, they did a very ill-timed placing, which I actually took part in, but it was very ill-timed because it was right at the time of the coup as well, which is also knock sentiment a bit. But the fact is, they're building this. Their mine is being built. They're moving to production,
yeah.
And there's, it's gonna move, I think. I've bought quite heavily in there.
Okay, marvelous. So two stocks to look at: Ariana, that's AAU, and Mrs., which is Management Resources. Tom, thanks very much, fellas. Speak soon.
No problem. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey of Financial Orbit. You right, Chris?
Hi there, Justin. Yeah, not so bad, thanks. It's been a busy summer period, and we've come to September for even more excitement and, who knows, even maybe some volatility.
Yeah, well, listen, I do five things in you need to know in a minute, pretty much, in the mornings, an update of macro. And one of those things was about, I did turn it on, actually. I tried to watch Mark Carney because I saw on Twitter he was being grilled, but he looked quite calm. What do you reckon?
the word he used was serene. I'm not sure whether that was how he felt about his pay package, extraordinary hotel expenses and everything else. But there you go. About the economy, he was remarkably upbeat, actually. He essentially said that he saved the world and the UK economy, and that basically everything was down to the extraordinary action that the Bank of England did, which has clearly suppressed the likelihood of a UK recession, which I thought was quite optimistic of him, really, because it seems to me that we haven't seen anything yet in terms of any forms of proper negotiations with Europe or anything like that. But, you know, good on him at least for sticking up for his side of the story and talking up the Bank of England's role and action.
Yeah, do you think it was a case of, you know, if the economy had tanked and he'd done nothing, then he'd have been in a worse situation, wouldn't he? The people would have said to him, listen, you didn't do anything. What are you here for? You didn't do anything. You saw this coming. It was signposted months in advance. We all knew, you know, if it had gone the wrong way, sentiment would have taken a knock. And you didn't take any action. So essentially, he couldn't have, you know, could he have won here, you know, really?
He is between a rock and a hard place. Look, I'd much rather he was on the front foot and actually did something and overreacted. I don't think he has overreacted. I think he's been actually quite sensible in the wider scheme of things. But there are things out of his control. You know, all he can do is fiddle around with the interest rate and the QE levers and basically otherwise exhort people to do things, be it banks to cut rates, governments to do stuff which is helpful for the economy, etc. And therein lies his problem. Look, he's actually done an all right job, all amusing sort of comments aside. I thought his sort of chat with the parliamentary committee, he was slightly self-important or slightly full of himself, but that's his general stance on life. Looking forward, he's got some big challenges to face because we haven't seen anything yet in terms of the European debate and related. But, you know, the world moves on. And the good news for us all is that at least he's done something, and there are still interesting stocks out there to buy and sell. And frankly, from an investor's point of view, that's the way you should view it. The government, the central banks are not going to forever bail you out. You've got to take stock of things yourself, look for interesting companies to do stuff with.
That leads nicely into interesting companies. What are you looking at then, Chris?
Yeah, so one from yesterday, Wednesday, was Ashtead. They, FTSE 100 name now, never used to be, but it is now. Mm. And for those not wholly familiar with the company, obviously active in plant hire and tool hire, mostly actually in the States, that's the majority of their revenues. They've got a plant here in the UK, people may have seen around the country. The huge distinction with Ashtead versus some of the broad sector peers, people like HSS and Speedy Hire, which have been shocking investments, is that Ashtead have executed this big US business has done very well for them, and have actually done a lot better in the UK too. Look, my observation here is you look at the chart of Ashtead and you think to yourself, I've missed it. And, you know, I've been an investor in the company for the last 6 or 7 months. It's done really, really well. But the thing is, I think there's actually more to go. And I think this is often the case in companies which are, shall we say, sort of these classic sort of medium-term growth opportunities. What they're observing is that the rental market is still hot. People, companies, etc., they're not wanting to buy plant and stuff and equipment immediately. They want to rent it. They want to have that flexibility. And that sort of thematically suits Ashtead very well. They're still taking share. They've got a nice young fleet. They spent the money to get themselves into a good position. They're taking market share. And as I say, the contrast with the performance of some of their rough sector peers, companies like the old aforementioned HSS and Speedy Hire, a couple of names in the States as well, has been dramatic. I think this company is still performing. And I think people should look at the chart and not think, oh my God, I've missed it. But okay, guys, when do I get in? Good news is I've run the numbers. The share's trading at around 10 times EV EBIT. I would suggest that's value. They're deleveraging further, sticking out a couple of percent on the dividend yield. Free cash flow more than covers that. I think this one's got further to go. I think if you were a sort of a technical rather than an earnings-based analyst, you might say, look, I'm going to wait for £12. And I think that's a very reasonable view, given that, as we've observed already, there is a bit of scope for volatility in markets. But I think if you don't own Ashtead, stick a flag at £12, and when it hits that level, think about it very seriously.
Well, it's done a 50% rise, and for a FTSE, you know, company like that, it's a lot from £8 to over £12. since, what, April? So that's and also looking at the chart in retrospect, it's always easy to see a double bottom, a higher low, and then it, you know, but at the time it's probably, you know, you think, is it going below £8 here? But that £8 support level, you know, is quite nice there. And it's like I said, it's always easy in retrospect, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think though that the themes here are still strong, positive. They're still executing, still doing well in terms of operational improvements and everything else. They're in that virtuous circle phase. Still a bit further to go on this one, I would say. My personal view, if you push me, would be that this goes deeper into the teens pounds level over the balance of this year and 2017.
Yeah, well, do you know, by the way, ticker code is AHT. And by the way, I'm talking about double bottoms and a chart there. You mentioned a couple of weeks back Thomas Cook Group, and that looks to be almost like a couple of months behind. I'm not saying it's going to rise as far as Ashton's gone, but if you look at the chart there, it's looking promising. Now, when you're on a couple of weeks back, what's it, Thomas Cook, TCG, Thomas Cook Group, and you can see almost a similar formation there. You've got a double bottom, a higher low, and it's going up towards this. In fact, the price is heading towards 125 moving average just underneath that. It looks quite nice, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think obviously I'm much more of a fundamental investor, but you know, I acknowledge and recognise in the short term the market is a voting machine. You've got to be aware of the charts and momentum and stuff like that. That's why I always factor it in, because it is important, particularly over the shorter time periods. Look, I made the observation a few weeks ago that at 60p, I felt Thomas Cook shares were much more likely to go to a pound than 50p. I stick with that view. You've had very little in terms of kind of operational fundamental updates since, albeit that the sun has shone a bit more. And I guess, fortunately, there's been no horrible kind of geopolitical terrorism type things ongoing. Look, the view is I still think recovering Thomas Cook stock. I think at 75p, it's not too late. And I guess there are some people who will take greater comfort in how the chart looks now than previously. So I still think it's going fundamentally to a pound, and it still remains one may not be booking a holiday through them, but I like the stock.
Yeah, I mean, I would say short-term wise, it's looking a little bit, I mean, it did get overbought in the RSI, and it's jumped back a bit here, so you may see a little pullback for an opportunity, but I wouldn't count on it. You know, you never know. So we are. Lovely stuff. Thank you very much, Chris. Speak soon, fella.
Yeah, my pleasure. Speak soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. And if you chart the share prices against companies that regularly appear in here, you'll see a strength in the performance of that share price. Okay, at five on the podcast today, new entry, Pantheon Resources, PANR. At four, oof, it's been going well. Tolu Energy, TLOU, a regular appearer in the top five. At three, it's Sigma Rock, SRC. At two, again, check out the share price on this. Proxarma, PROX, recently on the podcast. And at one, a new entry, straight in at number one. And the Mad Stork talked about them on the podcast today. I've not heard a lot about them until I saw that RNS bandied about on social media today. But it's Futura Medical, FUM, FUM. So maybe worth checking that out. But they've risen strongly. Like I said, they've gone from 30 pence to over 90 pence in the last two trading sessions. Tripling your money there if you're in. Lucky enough being at 30 pence. Okay, the most liked RNS on the Vox Markets website today in the last 24 hours, it was Strateros, AERO. They've won a UK Environment Agency contract worth up to 2.5 million. And if I could just check out their market cap, I know they've risen strongly today, and they're up, as I'm looking now, over 35%. Yeah, their market cap is 1.93. So, you know, it's you can see the size of the contract compared to the market cap. Some would say, well, they have had a re-rate today almost, haven't they? But worth keeping an eye on. And the most disliked RNS on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours is by Cropper, CRPR, and is a director shareholding. Apparently, director sold some shares there, and someone didn't like that. A couple of people, looks like, to make it into the most disliked, it's quite a few people didn't like that. And they've given it the thumbs down. So by all means, if you see an RNS, this would help hugely to the podcast. If you see an RNS you like or dislike when it's released, please click the thumbs up or thumbs down on the app or the website. And if it hits the top spot there, I could be reporting on it. Okay, today's suggested one for your watchlist has been submitted by Oil Player 2009. It is Goldstone Resources. What does the company do? It's a gold explorer. How many shares does the company have in issue? 103 million. What is the current price of market cap? It's 2.45 pence, market cap 2.5 million. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? I had to look this up myself here. But in a full year ended 31st December 2015. They're reporting revenue of $27,500. And they made a loss there of $1.2 million. There's three reasons why you think people should put this company on their watch list. By the way, they recently raised, they recently raised £1 million pounds, that's pounds, not dollars, in July. So they have cash there, and their market cap is 2.45, or 2.5. So reason one, recent nearby corporate transaction has a read-across value of 18 pence per Goldstone share. Wow. They have a JORC ounce, a resource of 600,000 ounces, close to a world-class gold mine. And three, major shareholders include Metal Tiger, Stratex, and Red Rock Resources, and recent director buys. So check that out. That's Goldstone. That's GRL ticker. And by all means, get involved. If you know of a company that you think people should have their watch on their watch list, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the link in one of my blogs there, and you'll see a form. It takes 5 minutes to fill in, and I'll mention it on the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.